You're listening to the MoneyWeb Now podcast series with Simon Brown. Live streamed every weekday at 6:30 a.m.
It's Tuesday, 28 July. U.S. trade balance data due this afternoon. I'm Simon Brown, coming at you live and loud from MoneyWeb Studios in Gauteng, Johannesburg. On the show today, Donnie Dorfling, he's head of business development, More Infinity. The Vodacom update, lots of moving parts there, perhaps the big one, I don't know. The dividend payout ratio was cut, and also more generally, telcos, if we have a moment. Stephen Linnell, he's CEO of Pay Inc., the story of payments as we move to apps and digital wallets. And then we're going to chat with Satrix, asset bubbles, and what investors get wrong. This podcast is brought to you by Stanlib Asset Management. Invest in more certainty to navigate volatile market conditions. Morning headlines, MoneyWeb, growing pushback against forced retirement and medical aid membership. And Business Day, grim 6 months triggers week-long safety reset at Implats Rustenburg. 8-day production pause to help strengthen safety controls. Morning markets, US was mixed. S&P, 0.02% higher. NASDAQ was down 0.3%. The East is mostly green. Sydney up 0.7%. Tokyo under massive pressure, 4% down on trip worries out of South Korea. Hong Kong, green, but 0.02%, and Tencent up 0.8%. Commodities mostly red. Gold futures, $4,075 an ounce. Brent, $86.95. Platinum, $1,621. And palladium is the green, $1,290. Rand is $16.77. Bitcoin, $63,300. And top 40 opening call, red open, 170 points, or 0.1% lower.
MoneyWeb Now, on the money. Also available on podcast.
Joining now with Donnie Dorfling, Head of Business Development, More Infinity. Donnie, appreciate the early morning time, the Vodacom trading update, the quarter ending 30 June. It was weird because initially the market really hated it. The stock was down, I think it was maybe 4%, then recovered nicely. Acquisition of the controlling stake in Safaricom completed. Egypt booming. Dividend cover dropped from 75 to 65%. For you, thoughts, highlights from the update?
Yeah, I think, thanks Simon for having me. I think the important distinction is that Vodacom cut obviously the minimum payout ratio, not necessarily the dividend itself.
The
policy, of course, moving from paying at least 75% of headline earnings to at least 65%, but management is still saying that it expects the dividend per share to grow in the 2027 financial year. Mm-hmm. The reason is obviously the capital allocation, as you rightfully mentioned. Vodacom has just spent about $35 billion increasing its Safaricom holding from 35% to 55%, and that essentially gives them control. And it now wants more flexibility to invest in its networks and financial service platforms while progressively reducing the associated debt. So this is not presently a distress signal for me. It is a decision to retain more of the earnings because Vodacom believes it now has more growth opportunities.
That's a fair point. I mean, they've got the money, and the question is if they can use it to grow the business, then good on them. Egypt doing really well, and that, I mean, because I mean, South Africa, small. You know, I mean, I think at one point some of the numbers were like 2% growth. Yeah, South African service revenue 2% up, but yeah, we're the mature market. Egypt 32.8% in local currency, doing really well in Egypt.
Absolutely, and that begs the question. Well, isn't this dividend rate cut actually negative for the income investor? Because essentially we're going into growth markets. So it reduces the certainty that much of each rand of profit will immediately reach the shareholder. So pure income investors should recognize that the proposition has obviously changed. But retained earnings is not automatically negative. The test is what Vodacom does with that money. So if it reduces acquisition debt, it earns attractive returns through Safaricom, M-Pesa, Egypt and its wider network, as you rightfully mentioned, shareholders may ultimately receive a smaller percentage of a much larger earning base. So it becomes negative if the company retains the cash, but that cannot convert the promised growth into attributable free cash flow.
More broadly in the sector, looking at the Vodacom chart, I mean, the stock's doubled since beginning of last year. And if I pulled up MTN, I would get similar. We've now, of course, got Cell C. There is Telkom. Telco sector had a really, really good 24, 25 into 26. Sorry, my bad. Doubled from Jan 24. Your thoughts on the sector more broadly? Still opportunity because it has run hard.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I think for investors should not treat it as a simple bond proxy because they have attractive characteristics, right? I mean, connectivity is essential, revenue recurs, barriers to entry are high, and African operations still have structural growth in data and smartphones, fiber, and then obviously mobile money. But they're also extremely capital intensive. I mean, data usage can grow dramatically without revenue growing at the same rate because the price per gigabyte continues to fall. So operators then have to spend more on the spectrum and network capacity simply to carry that traffic. So telecoms are defensive in terms of demand, but they're not automatically defensive in terms of shareholder cash flow. So I guess what are the most important numbers that investors should watch? Free cash flow after capital expenditure, and for geographically diversified operators, the cash that actually reached the listed parent. So obviously EBITDA can rise while spectrum, network investment, interest minorities, and currency movements consume the economic benefit. Ultimately, EBITDA does not pay the dividend. Cash does.
That's a great point. It's about cash, and typically they're good with cash, but there are risks to it, and I suppose that is a key point. We'll leave it there. It's Donnie Dorfling here, of course. More Infinity. Appreciate the early morning time. That's our poll today. LinkedIn. What do you think of the update? Have your vote. Have your say. LinkedIn. Let your money weather the storms with StanLib Asset Management. Invest in the StanLib Global Select Fund, a diversified all-weather equity portfolio sub-managed by JP Morgan Asset Management.
MoneyWeb now on the money.
Chatting with Stephen Linnell, CEO at PayInc. Stephen, appreciate the time. A series done by your colleagues and yourself at PayInc around payments. First of a multi-part series. What really got me thinking, over the last 6 months, you say sort of 8 million electronic and card transactions a day, value of almost 50 billion rand a day. Payments are everywhere, but more than just that, payments are really, they are the wheels that drive the economy, silently, invisibly, but no payments, no economy. And I know that's stating the obvious, but I'd never thought of it that way before.
100%, Simon. So, I mean, what we really wanted to lift out in this particular series of transactions is that, as you say, for most of us, when we make a payment to acquire something, we're not interested in the payment. It's invisible, it's highly effective, and we don't really mind about it. But underneath that, we're wanting to showcase that there is actually a national development story for South Africa that can use migration to digital payments to unlock significant opportunities in the ecosystem.
It absolutely is. And I mean, I'm old enough to remember the old Zip-Zap credit card machines that were giant. You know, but these days, it really is. You know, I do a card tap, although to be clear, I don't even do that anymore. I tap my phone. And there is then a ton that happens in the background, including confirmation that is coming back to me in the blink of an eye. This is huge tech.
It's milliseconds, and I guess that talks to the heart of what PayInc itself does. We are the national payments utility for South Africa, and we effectively run the infrastructure that enables banks to process the value that you initiate on any transaction.
And the new trend is sort of almost, we've got credit cards and they work and there's the like, but we're moving towards payment apps. I'm thinking the buy now, pay later. I'm thinking, I mean, PayShap, it's an app, it sits within my banking app. Digital wallets. There is a shift now towards those apps, and we're moving on from the physical card and the like.
Absolutely. I think one challenge in South Africa is relative to much of the other global economy, we've actually got very low digital wallet penetration. Mm. It's probably sitting close to around 8% versus the global average of upwards of 30%. So we're probably slow to migrate to this almost point of initiation. But in part, that lends itself to the fact that we do have a very well-developed, particularly in the formal sector, well-developed payments orchestration network, which, as you mentioned, is dominated by card.
And I make the point, you say 8% versus a global 30. That kind of makes sense, I imagine, but there's also huge potential and I imagine huge demand for it. I mean, things such as the township economy, cross-border remittances back to home countries, making it more seamless and, I think, importantly, the speed at which it happens.
Absolutely. I think that's really the unseen opportunity for us. I think the most of the formal sector is well serviced from a payments perspective, but the informal sector is largely dominated by cash. Mm-hmm. And we expect almost 2/3 of every transaction to be facilitated by cash. And if we can shift that needle and provide opportunities for digital payments, that opens up a number of opportunities. The most obvious one is that it does broaden financial inclusion.
Yeah.
If I was, for example, a spaza shop, it's not just when I accept a digital payment that I receive the money instantaneously, but it does create effectively a digital data trail, which can therefore be used for further credit extension or issuance, insurance. And so it's critical that we do move incrementally away from cash to enable financial inclusion.
100%. It's also, and I'm thinking around sort of online e-commerce and the like. I mean, cash just doesn't work in that environment at all. So it's not just the spaza shop in Quandageze. It just needs to open up the entire online environment and to all the other opportunities.
Absolutely right. I mean, point of sale is particularly important because most of it is cash today. But if you're on e-commerce, really you're left with a digital payment type.
Yeah,
So the more efficient that is, the better it gets for everyone.
Where do we, I mean, so we are behind in terms of usage, but in terms of the actual technology, where do we sit? Because I'm thinking back to, I don't know, I mean, Mark Shuttleworth, now he wasn't quite payments, but he kind of was on the edge of it, and certainly around security, which back then, 25 years ago, was the challenge we were trying to solve. Where do we sit globally on the tech stack?
Yeah, our tech stack, we're world class. So I think this spawns initially from a very well-developed banking sector where there's incredibly high penetration in South Africa of bank accounts. Mm-hmm. And then brought it to the fintech community. But as it pertains to payments, you know, South Africa was one of the first in the world that had a real-time payment system. Now, that used to be called RTC, but now has been replaced by PayShap, which, albeit in its infancy, we believe is at the heart of this digital revolution, which is gaining momentum.
How is PayShap doing? Because I've chatted with colleagues of yours around it. I love it. I think it's an absolutely brilliant. It has transformed our regular Wednesday evening poker nights, although maybe I shouldn't say that on radio.
Particularly if you're paying.
Well, particularly means everyone pays you. What is take up like? Because I see the attraction to it across so many ways. It's like that invisible cash. It goes back to the initial question. It really is instant and real and money.
Absolutely. It was designed really to substitute cash. So we tried to keep it as close to the benefits that cash has today, most importantly, as you mentioned, the immediacy of the payment. And it's growing rapidly. So we recently, I think it was last month, crossed our 1 billion transaction mark.
Oh, wow.
We're doing over 60 million transactions a month. But it's got a long way to grow. So for the most part, the volume over PayShap today is really just the migration of digital payments on other rails onto PayShap because it is more effective and more efficient. Mm. But the growth opportunity is when you move from just making a payment to your poker buddy to acquiring something, so merchant-styled payments.
Yeah.
There you need a critical unlock, so the merchant economy, which is a QR payment or, as you mentioned, tap and pay. Those are critical to scale the next phase for PayShap.
We'll leave it there. Stephen Leno, he's CEO Payink. Appreciate the time.
Give you money, smoother returns with StanLib Asset Management. The StanLib Flexible Income Fund's agile investment process preserves and grows capital in all markets.
MoneyWeb now, on the money.
Chatting now with Nico Katzke, Head of Portfolio Solutions at Satrix. Nico, always appreciate the early morning talking around bubbles and whether we should worry. Interesting piece out from you. Let's start, I suppose, with definition of a bubble. I'm keen to head to sort of Greenspan's irrational exuberance comment. I think that was late 96. But, I mean, it is broadly, it's irrational pricing and FOMO. But truthfully, underlying it is often proper quality. And you know, we think of some of those dot-com stocks. Capitec was often accused of being a bubble, yet here we are today.
Morning, Simon, and good morning to your listeners. It's great to speak to you again. Yeah, interesting topic, hey? And I think it's incredibly relevant to us all. You know, our view on AI and technology stocks more broadly has actually been quite consistent in recent years. We remain of the view that, to your point, based on traditional accounting measures, tech companies may look expensive now.
Yeah,
absolutely. Yeah. But we have to acknowledge the inadequacy of traditional accounting and asset pricing models in actually valuing technology companies whose book values often reflect immaterial things like IP, first mover benefits, network effects, and the list goes on, right? So to the casual observers, the problem is that when experts make statements to the effect of labeling companies or entire sectors as overvalued and clearly in bubble territory, it's not actually simply a matter of semantics. It directly affects investor behavior. You know, over the past few years, we've seen many advisors and investors choose to sit on the sidelines and avoid tech exposure completely. and you know, tech-heavy sectors like the NASDAQ or the S&P 500, which has clearly not served their portfolio as well. And the question, I think, remains why people are actually so quick to dismiss new technologies in the first place.
That's actually a great point, because many of these bubbles, and to be clear, not necessarily always, but I mean, as I'm running through various bubbles in my head, they are usually about that new technology, which, to your point, oftentimes current accounting principles don't quite fit, truthfully, investor understanding. I mean, we throw around the term AI. We don't know what AI is going to look like in 10 years' time. We know it's going to be something, but exactly what? I mean, I don't know.
Absolutely. And I think it's maybe important to take a step back and just, you know, ask what it means when we say a bubble. Mm. I think it refers to periods, and then you mentioned it at the start, where investors are irrational in their valuation of assets, you know, where a buying frenzy leads others to participate too. And this causes, you know, further pushes up the price and causes a reinforced frenzy buyer's market. Oftentimes, what labels a bubble is this happens without due consideration of the actual investment case. Now, to your point, there's many examples of this in the past, but those are always only ever clear in hindsight. That's the irony, right? And in fact, there are equally many times where many cried wolf only to later regret not investing in the companies or technologies after their use cases has become clear. And that's not how you make money, you know, in the market. Johnny come lately is a poor man. Mm-hmm. The reality is that Mr. Market has in the past been remarkably efficient at pricing assets and predicting trends, offering actually very few instances of obvious opportunities to either buy or sell in hindsight. But I think fundamentally, if we just come back to it, when it comes to valuing assets, we always need to compare the price paid today to the future earnings potential of a company tomorrow. Now, whenever future earnings potential is uncertain, it complicates the analysis. You know, let's take a simple example. If Ford retailed at multiple times its projected earnings, you'd more easily conclude whether it's expensive or not, as its business model is actually quite well understood, right? It buys, builds and sells cars, meaning its scaling potential is physically limited.
Yeah.
But for companies building a technological framework whose end state is as of yet unknown, it becomes extremely complicated to actually do a fundamental analysis. And the best we can do, I believe, for now, is to be slower in concluding that prices paid today for companies, you know, at the forefront of technological development are not a fair reflection of how these companies will mature. Shouting bubbles based solely on historical comparisons for me seems like lazy analysis that needs a deeper clarification of where exactly the market is being irrational.
That's a great point. And I remember the early days of the internet, sort of early 2000s. And I remember the talk around watching a video on my phone. And I was like, this is the stupidest thing I've ever heard. But of course, I didn't imagine what the phone was going to become or what the speed or anything. And well, now that's how we spend many of our days. You also make a great point. And I take your point that banding around the word bubble in and of itself is not helpful. In fact, we can say it's actually a dishelp to investors. But also, I mean, the optimal number of bubbles you make in the article you wrote is not zero. We need this, because this is around that technological advancement. This is how society moves forward in those big leaps.
Exactly. So, you know, I make the point, it might be controversial, that, you know, bubbles generally get a bad rap.
Yeah.
Now, this may sound strange, right? But I really believe that the optimal amount of bubble and busts is not zero.
Yeah.
We actually need periods where the market loses its, let's call it, short-term sensibilities and relaxes its typical risk tolerance, you know, spurring the development of technologies and actually propel society forward. Internet, railways, et cetera, which at the time seemed expensive, irrational, but, you know, it's stuff we use every day. Now, look, I cannot foresee a world where we will become less reliant on generative assistance. And as we transition into this uncertain world, it seems in my mind most irrational to label the technology as a bubble. That's for me the most irrational thing currently. Now, will there be disappointments, Simon, in AI? Absolutely. Some companies will disappoint. But I believe ultimately that we are at an inflection point in how we utilize information technology more broadly. Now, will you and I still use ChatGPT in 5 years? Maybe, maybe not. How will we use it in our daily lives? You know, who knows? From our point of view, AI integration will likely be more gradual than many make it out to be. I don't think you're going to wake up one day and your wife and kids and job has been taken by AI. I think broad adoption will happen organically, the same way we began using email or the computer, or more recently become comfortable with Teams calls and working from home. You know, these things happen gradually. And dismissing the technology just because we deem the accounting measures to be out of whack with historical comparisons, I don't think is sensible. And another interesting point that I just want to quickly make, which I think a lot of listeners might not know, is as of today, you're getting actually more exposure to AI in the MSCI EM index than in both the NASDAQ and S&P 500. That's a great irony, right? So, and this is largely as a result of large exposures to TSMC and a few Korean stocks. But the point is, it's becoming harder to find suitable diversification for those looking to avoid tech exposure completely. And what we've seen is a lot of investors are sitting on the sidelines and wanting no equity exposure because they look in the short term and they want to avoid short-term pain, but ultimately pay away long-term opportunities to create wealth over the long term.
Yeah, and your EM example is great. I was buying some of the EM ETFs last year, and they've become tech. I mean, as you said, they are just tech. And we're early. My father got a fax machine in the 80s, and he couldn't fax anyone for the first 6 months because no one else had one. And then, I don't know, 5 years later, everyone had them. 20 years later, they were gone because of email. We'll leave it there. Nico Katske, Head of Portfolio Solutions, Satrix. Appreciate the early morning time. That's it for today. I was chatting with Thomas Berry, he from PSG Wealth, talking around various tax allowances available to South Africans that can fundamentally enhance your savings, enhance your investing. We asked you if you were using available tax allowances to their full benefit. Almost half said yes. A third said not sure, may need some help. A quarter said all the way. The rest of you said you are trusting your accountant. Have your vote. Have your say. LinkedIn. This podcast is brought to you by Stanlib Asset Management. Invest in more certainty to navigate volatile market conditions. We're live every weekday morning, the MoneyWeb website and the app, 6:30 a.m. podcast just after 7. Thanks to my team, Eddie Nobukle, Nicole Sabu, to you for listening, my guests for their time. My name is Simon Brown. This is MoneyWeb Now. We'll chat again tomorrow. Global fragmentation.
You've been listening to another MoneyWeb Now podcast, posted every weekday at 7 a.m. on moneyweb.co.za. MoneyWeb Now, on the money.